Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
The world of media moves fast, and marketers have to keep up in a complicated landscape. Viacom CBS IQ makes buying easy with one simple digital video solution that's built for brands. Viacom CBS IQ allows marketers to reach incremental audiences at scale in brand-safe, high-impact environments. Combined with Viacom CBS's IP-fueled creative capabilities and vast social footprint, IQ Video will deliver your message alongside unmatched, culture-defining, live and on-demand content to 60 million monthly full episode viewers. For more, visit viacomcbs.com/IQ. That's viacomcbs.com/EYEQ. Viacom CBS IQ. Look into it today.
You're listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. This is the Adweek podcast where we talk about marketing, media, technology, pop culture, because in the end, everything is an ad. I'm David Greiner. I'm the international editor for Adweek. Co-M, our co-host, is not with us this week because we have a packed table, virtual table here representing all the best parts of the world. We've got London, we've got Scotland, we've got Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Shannon?
Yep.
All right, we're really covering, and me in Alabama. So, okay, we really just have two regions covered here. But I am joined by our international coverage team and our creative coverage team, which has expanded considerably in recent weeks and months. And so I'm excited to have everyone on board. Just kind of introduce everyone real quickly here. Sarah Sperry has been with us for, I think, over a year now, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I started just as London went into lockdown. So it's been a year now.
That's right. Wow. So Sarah works with me most days covering creativity from around the world, especially in the UK market and Europe. And her coverage is just such a fun read on adweek.com. So Sarah, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
We've also got Shannon Miller, who is our somewhat new, I think you're a few weeks in now, senior editor for creativity and representation. Shannon has been writing for Adweek for a long time and is one of my favorite writers that I've ever gotten to work with on a freelance basis, and we have finally suckered her into joining us full-time here at Adweek. Shannon, welcome to Adweek officially, and thanks for joining the podcast.
It is really great to be back. Thank you very much for having me in an official capacity now.
Yeah, what was the last time? I remember you and I like derailing an entire podcast to talk about Lovecraft Country. I don't remember what the topic was supposed to be, but it's it's dangerous to have Shannon and I in the same Slack room and or podcast. But Shannon, you were previously at AV Club and you run your own podcast. Tell us, remind us about it.
Yeah, it is Nerds of Prey. It is a podcast that is helmed by three Black women talking about nerd culture from our unique perspectives. And a lot of times those conversations get derailed as well. So I am probably the common denominator in that. Talking about everything from comics to television to film, music, whatever crosses our plate.
And our newest team member, although we've all known him for a considerably long time, Stephen Leptak, our UK bureau chief as of this week, as we record this. Stephen, you're outside of Glasgow, right?
I am not far outside of Glasgow, but yeah, Not in Glasgow.
Nice. And Stephen has a very long storied reputation in the ad industry, in the ad journalism world, has been covering this for quite a while, and is such a, it's just so great to finally have you on the team and to not be your arch, you know, not to have you as my arch nemesis anymore. This is great. We actually get to get along.
You make me feel so old, though. I feel so old with that introduction.
Hey, just embrace it. It's, yeah. You know, veteran status is hard earned. But today we're going to be talking about basically what we've seen. I will be candid. The real goal of this podcast is just these are some folks we haven't gotten a chance to introduce our listeners to. But also partly because of time zones. We've got Sarah is way over in London. And Co is in Seattle. So we've got a bit of a stretch between our potential guests. But these are folks that I work closely with each day and who have a huge impact on Adweek's coverage and have been keeping a really close eye on these industries that we cover each day. So with that, I wanted to kind of set the stage by just talking about what trends we're seeing creatively. And you know, for I think each of us has been covering some, you know, branch of marketing creativity in each of our jobs for quite a few years now, for several years. And I think we've all seen where things are changing. Sarah, you've, like I said, you've been here for about a year now, but you've been covering marketing long before that. What kinds of stories, what kinds of issues do you see cropping up more often, whether it's in the UK or in Europe or just more generally globally?
Yeah, so it's been quite a strange year because when I started this job, the whole world was just becoming gripped by this pandemic and London had just gone into lockdown. And I think that brands and agencies have been really struggling to get the right messages across. And I think they've been doing a really good job, but trying to get across empathy whilst also being quite relatable. So lots of the ads that have stood out to me have been the ones that I thought, yeah, that kind of says a bit about what my life is like right now. One recent example was, it wasn't actually a genuine brand ad. It was an ad created on spec for KitKat. And I don't know if you know of this one. It went quite crazy across LinkedIn and Twitter. It showed a blocked out Google calendar with Zoom, endless Zoom meetings. And in the middle, it just had KitKat, a picture of a KitKat, which perfectly communicated the fact that everybody desperately needs a break. But yeah, it's very strange times we found ourselves living in.
I feel like this has almost been like a golden age of spec. Like, Stephen, I feel like we've seen, like, remember the Guinness poster last year that everyone thought was real? And it was just like that one. It was just a 1 minute brief, but it was just so good. So relatable because it didn't go through the marketing machine.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks to the brilliance of 1 minute briefs. That every year it seems as though something like that just captures the attention of the industry, but also reaches the public consciousness as well. They've had a phenomenal run of late, but the KitKat work was brilliant.
Yeah, I remember just the thousands of shares or whatever that thing got on LinkedIn was bananas. I think Sarah, you raise a really fantastic point. Is this constant struggle between empathy and relatability? Because it is certainly it's certainly easy to go too far down the empathy rabbit hole. Where and we all remember this from the early days of quarantine, lockdown, advertising, right? Where everything was like, in these uncertain times.
Definitely.
We are here for each other. And it just got so old so fast, yeah. Where you're like, you don't have to make me miserable in every ad.
I feel as though the UK were absolutely crying out to get comedy back into our ads. It's still not really come back. And I was thinking about this last week when Walker's Crisps has released a new ad campaign with the comedian Asim Chowdhury. And it's quite funny. It's a nice ad, but it stands out to me because there's just not a lot of comedy in the creative work at the moment. And I think people are desperate for that to come back.
I think like comedy's fine. It's when you get into trying to be provocative that I think brands need to like maybe show even more restraint than usual, because we are all like on this edge, right? Like we're all at, you know, 99 out of 100 anxiety level at all times. And so when Burger King, you know, did their Women's Day stunt that was, you know, a woman's place is in the kitchen, and they tweeted that from the Burger King UK account, which was based on a print ad that kind of paid off that as a headline a little more quickly, although it's still probably not a great idea. But, you know, that really blew up. And I think their defense was just like, what? We're just trying to, like, you know, it's a tactic that I don't think ever would have been beloved, but I don't think we're in a place right now where you can just like kind of mess with people's emotions, because, you know, versus like, but yeah, make a joke, sure. And I think marketers had a hard time in the early days of finding that line, right? And they were like, we can't make jokes. Yeah, you can, just don't be dicks.
Oh, well, all I was going to say was, and I think you alluded to that there, and that the campaign from Burger King just did not work as a tweet. What were they thinking going with it? I mean, generally, the idea, dubious anyway, but when you saw it as a piece of print, and they actually, they had the headline Women's Places in the Kitchen, but then they explained it all, so it was all self-contained, but on Twitter, it was all chunks, so it just didn't make sense to go with Twitter as that, and I think they really shot themselves in the foot by going Twitter first.
And I think even just as an execution in general, if the foundation of your strategy is let's rile up this marginalized group, maybe rethink, because that messaging can be pretty triggering in a lot of ways. I think it's clever, like in the copy, but you also just have to think about, okay, is this worth it? Is kicking this hornet's nest worth it? And it would help, agencies to maybe take that step back before we execute anything like that again.
Yeah, Shannon, I completely agree. I also think that, you know, Burger King is a very pally brand, but I think in this instance, completely overestimated just how much people perceive Burger King to be like a friend that can take the piss on Twitter, basically. And I think that that's always a risk. And I think that's just a perfect example of taking it too far. People love the brand, but they don't love it that much. Not where it can take those type nuance, get involved in those sort of nuanced debates where people are so, as you say, really, some people are very triggered by that. And yeah, miscalculation, I think.
It's not to derail into a Burger King conversation, because they certainly still do a lot of really strong advertising, but it's been such a weird year. I was thinking about this the other day of like what Burger King has done over the past year after this like epic run, right? Like this truly phenomenal, almost back to their kind of mid-2000s level award-winning mega work and stuff. But then you think about this past year, they kicked off last year with Moldy Whopper, which I'm not going to subject everyone through another discussion of that one, but like, I get it. I think it's interesting. But again, you're basically telling all of your customers, like, look at our food just rotting. And then, okay, sure. Then they did a very stunty one a little later in the year, which I don't think got a lot of visibility, but it upset me personally, where they were basically telling people to go to abandoned locations of competitor fast food places and like check in there and you'd get a free Whopper. They're basically making fun of these failed businesses. And one of them was in my town, Birmingham, Alabama, which has a long history of economic struggles. We're doing, I mean, in a lot of ways very well, but in certain neighborhoods. And these are complicated issues, right? Like Shannon and I both keenly know when you get into the, you know, the geopolitics and the socioeconomics of the South, you are talking about race. Like, you are talking about poverty. You are talking about systemic prejudice and things. And that's the thing is, like, Burger King sometimes just stumbles into these things like, hey, look at all these abandoned fast food places. I'm like, yeah, from an economically devastated neighborhood, good point. I don't think you necessarily need to send people to drive there and make fun of them. And then to go, you know, and then to have the Women's Day thing, that's like three... I'm not going to say all of those were stumbles, but just like, are they just pushing things just to push them at this point? And to my point, the reason I bring all that is because, again, I think this is not the year to provoke people. I think it is the year to, sure, be edgy, have fun, but like recognize that you are provoking people at a time where they are already in the red. Mm-hmm. Shannon, what... You know, we've talked a bit about the UK, and I do want to go back to global in a minute, but, you know, you're a few weeks into Adweek. What trends are you seeing already just in the stuff that is maybe even surprising to you and just what a theme it is for creative coverage?
I'm going to say a sentence that I never thought I'd say. I've been writing a lot about sports lately, and it's been kind of incredible to watch unfold, and this could totally be confirmation bias. Like you write about one thing and then suddenly this flood of related material kind of comes in, either, you know, via pitch or just sort of what's on your radar. But I wrote about that one international piece, Havas Lisbon did that creative where they turned like their top three newspapers into infographics that showed just how little women's athletes are covered. And it's like huge blocks of, you know, male coverage, male coverage, male coverage, and then like little specks where they may have mentioned a female athlete. I'm trying to push for more equitable coverage of between men and women athletes. And since then, we've seen ads coming from Gatorade, from Schmidt's Natural Deodorant. There was, you can actually even take it as far back as the Super Bowl, when E-Trade did this very cute commercial where you have this boy idolizing this wrestler, and this wrestler is a black woman, which is, they don't really harp on it. They don't really mention it. It's not her race nor her gender are really part of the overall story, but just having that visual representation of this little boy idolizing this female athlete, I think that there is sort of this understanding that brands can leverage their platforms to provide a little bit more equitable treatment in sports specifically. So, which is interesting to me because back in my day, usually when there's you have your go-to athletes that are your, you know, your big, that do your big endorsements, and your one woman was Mia Hamm. That was pretty much it. So to have these different images of different athletes, Abby Wambach, Megan Rapinoe, sort of take the reins in sort of female representation is pretty cool. I would love to see more of a variety of, you know, in terms of race. I would love to see women that are in the WNBA because they've been sort of beating this drum for longer than I've been alive. But I think it's very interesting that there seems to be this rally, sort of rallying cry about, like, you know, treat female athletes a little bit more equitably. And ads are a great way to kick that off.
Yeah, I feel like maybe not in terms of dollars, but in terms of visibility and at least just acknowledging them, I feel like brands have been better supporters of women in sports than, you know, than largely the media, than broadcasters, than the sport leagues themselves, for sure. Shannon wrote up a piece the other day about the NCAA tournament, March Madness, which, I have to admit, I learned a lot reading up about this, the fact that March Madness, like the NCAA considers that to only be men's basketball. Like they don't consider the women's tournament part of officially March Madness, which is wild. There was a video that went viral of one of the Oregon athletes talking about their very, very unequal training facilities. The men had unlimited resources and the women had literally one weight rack. And it was not an issue of space because they had tons of space. But what was fascinating to me about that is that her video went viral, 10 million plus views within a few hours. And then it was a brand that stepped in. Now, I don't know if they actually ended up taking them up on that offer at all, but Orange Theory Fitness, which of course generally, you know, targets women, they stepped up and said, hey, you can use any of the women's teams. You can use our facilities. We'll bring you equipment to the location. You know, you shouldn't have to go through this. And it was just one of those things, like when you see brands responding faster than your own league that represents your sport, like it's just so wild. And I don't know, for you two in the UK, do you feel like the representation, the portrayal of women in sports is changing globally too? Is it mostly in America? What are you seeing?
From my perspective, certainly the coverage in the last 5 years of women's sports in Europe has grown and grown. I mean, it's night and day compared to what it was probably just 5 years ago. And I think that's recognition that there's an audience there. Brands can tap into that audience as well. But, I mean, women's sport is growing in ways that I just wouldn't have expected. Sarah, how do you feel about it?
I think, yeah, there's definitely been a massive increase, massive focus, more airtime given over to women's sports for sure. And I also think looking at advertising more generally, there's been a huge push to better show the reality of life as a woman. So I'm going back a few years here, but with the This Girl Can campaign, I think really kicked that off. I don't know if you remember that one. And Sport England, I think it was just a couple of weeks ago now, they put out this free image library to be used by marketers for free, royalty free, showing real women exercising. So people of different races, of different abilities, just to try to really better represent the reality of being a woman and exercising, because I think historically it's been pretty poor, really, the way that it's been shown. I mean, not everybody's an athlete and not everybody's, you know, a model. So I think there's been great, great movements towards that.
Can I ask a question that maybe is ignorant geographically, but like when we talk about soccer or football, I feel like I never hear, like in America, when you talk about soccer, you're talking about women's soccer because that's what we're good at. You know, that's, you're almost never talking about the men's teams. I feel like as someone who's been covering global marketing for a while, I feel like I never hear about women in football in Europe and in the UK. Is that just me having a huge blind spot? Or I feel like we write about ads or we get pitched ads every single day with football stars. And it feels like I could not name a woman in football in the UK. Is that on me or is there an imbalance there?
I mean, from my point of view, it's still early days in terms of these athletes gaining the prominence that they actually deserve. I'm lucky enough to actually know the chief executive of the Scottish Women's Football Association, because she is a former marketer. And I mean, the work that they're doing to try and really grow the sport is phenomenal because it's working, it's catching fire. But in terms of internationally, these athletes have yet to gain that prominence. But the way it's gone, it could well happen. And I mean, I'm hopeful that we see a lot more of it because it's wonderful to have that representation, and it's happening more on television. So the coverage, we now have women commentators, which 5-10 years ago wasn't a thing. And the women footballers are starting to become they're starting to become pundits. So they're talking about men's football. The men, retired male footballers are starting to commentate on women's football. They're trying to merge it a lot better than it has been, but there's still a long way to go.
Well, that Sarah started to mention something that I definitely wanted to make time to talk about, because this is the trend I'm personally most excited about. And I think it's been really fantastic to watch this grow, is just how stigmas are addressed in advertising, right? And specifically in this case, stigmas against women, of which I would argue most stigmas are probably stigmas against women. Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong or if you just disagree on this, but I feel like it really started with Blood Normal, with Essity's Blood Normal campaign, which of course won a Glass Lion, and got a lot of attention. But I feel like that, you know, logistically that ad got a lot of attention. Essity Brands, I should point out, as I try to always do, is not a brand that people are generally aware of here in the UK. It's a parent company that includes Bodyform and Libresse and like 70 other brands, but most of which are not sold in America. But there, you know, that ad got a lot of attention logistically because most of the scenes in the ad trying to depict realistic portrayals of periods of menstruation, like almost every single one ended up being blocked by broadcast standards folks, but specifically showing blood, showing red period blood versus showing blue blue liquid in a tube or whatever. But Sarah, did you feel like that was kind of a turning point?
Yeah, I really do. Like you said, you know, this ad, I think it was maybe 2017 or 18 now when that first one came out. You know, it came out in the context of other adverts about periods and period products, using images of women wearing tight white trousers to show just how effective the products were, and using this creepy blue gel to show period blood. So I don't think it can be overstated just how much of a turning point that was, really, in advertising. And I think that it raised quite a lot of awareness of the issue of just how much we actually censor the reality of women's life in our society, in both countries that we're talking about here, but also advertising does play quite a key role in doing that, unfortunately. But ever since that campaign, they've had a few more out. There was the Viva La Vulva one featuring, I think it was about 100 singing vaginas, which was kind of crazy. And then just a couple of weeks ago now, they had a whole campaign out around endometriosis, which is a debilitating disease that affects, I think it's something like 1 in 10 women worldwide, but it's not talked about. And I think it's something like 7.5 years before a woman gets diagnosed with the condition. So the brand has definitely continued to tackle these taboo topics. And I think it's really important that they're doing that. I think that because it's body form here in the UK, because it is an intimate product and it has that connection with female consumers, I think it makes it an authentic topic for it to talk about. But I think that it's really hard for brands to get in on these conversations in an authentic way. But interestingly, I think when the endometriosis ad came out, and indeed actually when the Blood Normal ad came out, not everybody loved it. There's quite a lot of people that didn't like it, quite a lot of women that didn't, and thought that that was going a bit too close to the bone in terms of exposing what it's like to be a woman. But on the other hand, you've got people that have just really celebrated it and said, you know, yes, let's start talking about, you know, real life here.
Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to keep talking about stigma, because I feel like we've barely even scratched the surface of this, and it's such an important topic. So we will be right back after this break.
Trying to reach incremental audiences in the evolving streaming landscape? ViacomCBS's IQ Video makes it easy with a unified digital video solution that grants you access to ViacomCBS's powerful portfolio of content and digital platforms including Pluto TV and Paramount Plus. ViacomCBS IQ, one simple solution built for brands reaching 60 million monthly full episode viewers. For more, visit ViacomCBS.com/IQ. That's ViacomCBS.com/EYEQ.
So when we left off, we were talking about stigmas in advertising, specifically stigmas against women, of which most of them are. And some of these go back, honestly, to the beginning of advertising, literally to the beginning of it. Advertising notoriously vague, I guess is the nice way to put it, about women's issues, about menstruation especially, about just about anything. Just God forbid you actually say the words and talk about it. Shannon, one of those that has come up, especially recently, Sarah covered this, but it's popped up in both the U.S. and in the U.K., is breastfeeding. You know, this is another topic where, going back many years, social platforms have really kind of been a key factor in this, is that they do not like nipples, even though we've all got them. Most of us have a spare, but they have never allowed them. And so, of course, TV broadcast generally does not either. This has been a big holdup for things like breast cancer awareness and, God forbid, I mean, just many other things. But breastfeeding, just showing it in a normal way, even if you don't show the nipples, like just showing it as a natural process, showing people actually doing it, it just is still weirdly unheard of in marketing. It's almost never allowed, and social platforms have gotten a little better. A UK brand, Tommy Tippy, right, was the name of the brand? Sarah wrote up how Tommy Tippy ran an ad in the UK that was very just, I think they called it raw, right, Sarah? This was kind of the way they described it.
Yeah, they did. They called it raw. I think unapologetic as well might have been the word they used to describe it.
And just showing breastfeeding, like the reality of breastfeeding. And of course, to do that, you can't blur things. You can't show, you know, you can't cover everything up. And it's a great ad. Anyone who's been through parenting knows these are just like menstruation. It's just a daily reality of life. And it's so weird that ads like refuse to acknowledge that these things happen, especially that they happen to women every day. But then it also came to America with Freedom Mom, which I believe started in Sweden, but they do most of their advertising here in America. And they basically ran almost the exact same ad, coincidentally, like 2 days later, and they ran it during the Golden Globes. Shannon, do you feel like, are we finally kind of ready as a culture to move past this dumb block? Or, you know, I don't know, where do you feel about this trend?
Well, it's interesting. In some ways, I feel like we are inching forward towards something that's a little bit more normalized. It's not lost on me that when we do see these sort of casual occurrences of breastfeeding, that they are occurring in international ads, like with the Nike maternity wear ad that we recently covered. That was based in the UK, I believe.
Yeah, it was out of Wyden, London, I believe, right?
Yeah. So, and in that particular spot, it wasn't a huge focus. It was another moment that occurred in this ad, like randomly in between shots of these women working out, there is this woman breastfeeding. It was very normalized. There was not a ton of energy placed on that. And I think that that was amazing that that was happening. I would love to say that the American market is inching towards that, that we are getting to an area where we're recognizing breastfeeding as this sort of just this natural thing. I think it's going to come down to whether or not we see it more after Freedom Mom. And if we can break the American market, that I think is going to be pretty monumental, because the only times that you really see it stateside are when it's a moment of advocacy, when it's meant to be radical and in your face. And it would be great for us to get to an area where, like, it's just part of a Johnson & Johnson ad, or it's just part of, you know, even a formula ad. Just something that really shows that it is just something that's very normal. So it's going to really depend on, for me anyway, it's going to really depend on how we see it flourish in the American market. But UK and Europe seems to already kind of be heading in that direction.
I have a question that's semi-related for Sarah and Stephen, and I didn't prep this one for you in advance, so I don't know. I don't know if this is even a political question.
You haven't prepped any of this?
Yeah, it's a valid point. The advertising, it's called the ASA, right? The Advertising Standards Authority. We don't have an equivalent of this, so I should explain to Americans who aren't deep in advertising is that we don't have this body that oversees advertising. Broadcasters are basically left to self-police. So that we don't end up with a body like that. That's honestly why brands self-police themselves here, is so that the government never steps in. What's the take on the ASA? It feels like they're kind of notorious for, they'll take down an ad that got 5 complaints, right?
Mm. I don't know. Let Stephen say what he thinks.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, if they get one complaint, they have to look at it. It's whether or not they uphold the complaint. So they have to consider whether or not that complaint is valid before they spend time and effort actually reviewing it. But, I mean, they get more complaints than ads that they ban. So I think they still have a worthwhile role. It's when there have been cases where some brands have even created ads to cause that furor, to get attention from it as well. So, I mean, the ASA, it plays a role, and it's there to try and make sure that what is said in advertising is true. And unfortunately, because the trust in advertising is at an all-time low currently, these guys have to exist to make sure that we don't just have brands stating whatever they want to say. So while, I mean, there's a lot of criticism of them, they're there for a reason.
Do you feel, Sarah, do you feel like they're changing a bit in the sense of being a little less what we would call, I guess, puritanical, but just less about enforcing stigma and more about, to Stephen's point, enforcing accuracy, I guess?
I mean, to be fair, I think like lots of regulatory bodies, they don't really have a vast amount of, I'd say they don't have teeth per se. They really do work with advertisers to make them comply. So, and they have to act when they get a complaint. So it's largely driven by consumers. And then they'll have to investigate and just make sure. And if an ad has breached their rules, they will go to the advertiser and they'll ask them to change it. So they don't often sort of take ads down. It's more that they work behind the scenes, I think. Am I right in that, Stephen? I think that's, yeah.
They have something called there's a kind of side organization called CAP, which will work with agencies to try and make sure that what they're creating will not breach the code. But there has been some anomalies where some agencies that have worked with CAP have still been banned down the line. So they do have an arm that does try to help, but even that comes into criticism.
Well, we've got so much more we could talk about, but unfortunately we are out of time. So I just encourage everyone, keep an eye on adweek.com. We've got a lot more international coverage. We're growing that team even further. Stephen's a big part of that. Sarah's a big part of that. And then, of course, Shannon is really going to be building out our creative coverage here in America in a lot of really exciting ways. So keep an eye on adweek.com. Thank you, Shannon, Sarah, Stephen, for joining. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Our theme music is by Home. This week's episode is produced by Nick Gardner and edited by Lane McGivney. If you have not already, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Those reviews mean a lot to us personally, and they help new listeners discover the show. You can reach the Anytime Podcast at adweek.com. That's podcast at adweek.com. For Adweek, I'm David Greiner, and we will be back next week.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.